Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette dated Friday, May 2nd, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined 5P Syndrome. Wade's Awesome. How Monticello continues to support one of its own. Story by Matt Daniels out of Monticello. Chris and Megan Jones waited in a doctor's office 12 years ago, wondering why their four-month-old son Wade was having difficulty keeping baby food down, why his cry sounded a bit different. As first-time parents, their minds were racing, and when Wade let out a cry again on this particular day, their lives changed. A geneticist walked by the office during our appointment, heard Wade's cry, and called the doctor out to talk about it, Chris said in Wednesday evening, on Wednesday evening, sitting inside the third base dugout at Monticello High School's baseball field, after the Sages he's coached for the last 16 seasons finished a practice. What we were basically told is he would never walk, he would never talk. Wade is walking, Wade is talking. The 12-year-old loves sports, especially basketball, along with duck and goose hunting trips with his dad. Wade is doing all this as a seventh grade student at Monticello Middle School while living with cri du chat syndrome. It's a chromosomal condition, also known as 5P, that happens because a piece of chromosome 5 is missing. Children with 5P have a wide array of intellectual and developmental disabilities. The chance of having a child with 5P is 1 in 50,000. Wade is 1 out of 50,000. The biggest challenges Wade faces at this point in his life are daily living skills, like effectively communicating with others, feeding himself, and dressing himself, Wade Megan said. Watching him overcome challenges, however, like walking, running, and communicating that doctors said he would never do, has been so rewarding. Wade has had to work extremely hard and has been through more therapies and medical procedures than anyone should ever have to go through. But he gets up each day with a smile and carries on. He's thriving and happy, and for that we are so thankful. That's the backstory before Wade walks out on the Monticello baseball field on Monday afternoon to throw out the first pitch before the Sages host St. Joseph Ogden at 4:30 p.m. in one of the area's most anticipated games this season. And not just because of the two Illini Prairie Conference programs playing one another. Monday's game also serves as a 5P awareness game. Our main goal for that night is to raise awareness about what 5P is, Megan said. Awareness night is the one night where Wade gets to feel like he is part of the team. The entire student body at Monticello High School has spent this week partaking in 5P awareness efforts, with the Monticello Prep Club spearheading the initiative and having different spirit days each day this week geared around Wade's interests. Monday had freshmen and sophomores wearing blue, with juniors and seniors wearing green. Tuesday had students wearing their favorite baseball attire. Wednesday was wear camouflage colors. Thursday was superhero day. And Friday is Sages Day, with students wearing purple and gold. A week-long bake sale is also in the works, and a tailgate will happen before Monday's game, with donations accepted. All proceeds raised go toward the 5P Society to help families across the country learn about this rare disorder. Pep Club is all about cheering on the Sages, but we also focus on giving back, said Tara Stetson, a Monticello teacher who is in charge of the Pep Club. We give to Paint Pyatt Pink in the fall and St. Jude during the winter. When we decided to add something to spring, it was pretty much a no-brainer, and we went to Coach Jones to see what we could do to help him with raising awareness. We love giving back, and it means more when we know a family who is directly impacted by the cause. 2 years ago, Pep Club raised $800. Last year, they raised $2,000. Ultimately, the goal is to always beat the previous year, Stetson said. I always tell the kids that it doesn't matter how much we raise, it's just the fact that we are raising awareness and giving back. Experiencing the support of the Monticello community, not just the school, has given the Jones family is a humbling topic for Chris to consider. Just like the sign says when you come into town, Monticello is pretty unique, Chris said. It's a true statement that they're very accepting of everybody. We've felt accepted from the get-go since we've been here, as has Wade. Monticello and St. Joe Ogden are familiar with one another from playing in the same conference, but have also staged several epic postseason games in the past decade, with Chris coaching the Sages and Josh Haley coaching the Spartans. Getting the chance to become involved in Monday's game, where teams will both wear two different pairs of striped socks to represent the deletion of a portion of the P arm in the fifth chromosome, isn't lost on Haley. Chris and I go way back to our Millikan baseball years, so we've known each other a long time, said Haley in his 14th season coaching SJO. There's a mutual respect that we have that comes from all postseason battles because we've both been on each side of the highs and lows a postseason win or loss can bring. Chris is a great coach, but an even better father, and we are honored to help his family by being a part of this event to bring awareness to Wade's condition. The Monticello baseball players feel the same way, especially Russ Brown, a senior with the Sages, who is also Wade's cousin. Wade is one of a kind, Brown said. Whenever I get to hang out with him, it's always a blessing. Sometimes he'll say some things to make you laugh, and sometimes he'll say things that get him in trouble. But I love hanging out with him. He's just a great kid. Fellow seniors Colton Vance and Matt Schwartz said they've both learned more about 5P in their years playing baseball with the Sages, but also by getting to know and be around the Jones family on a consistent basis. Wade's awesome, Vance said. He brings so much energy to the field. He loves baseball, and he brings so much joy to the team. Wade's always included in what we do, Schwartz added. He'll come out for games, he'll crack jokes, he's a goofball, but he's such a good kid. Wade isn't the only child Chris and Megan are raising. Avery, a 10-year-old in fourth grade at Washington Elementary School in Monticello, is front and center too. Chris and Megan both got genetic testing done before having another child. We wanted to make sure we weren't carriers of it, which is basically the deletion of the fifth chromosome, Chris said. We had tests done to make sure we both weren't carriers, and when we found out we weren't, we decided to try and have another child. We're glad we did because Avery is the best little big sister in the world. Baseball means plenty to the Jones family. Chris has guided Monticello to nearly 300 wins in his tenure, along with three Class 2A regional titles and two 2A sectional titles in the last decade. Wade, however, has given Coach a different outlook he didn't have when he began his coaching career. Wade does a very good job of announcing himself when he gets to a game, Chris said with a laugh. He yells, "Dad," and I yell, "Wade," back to him immediately. He has given me a little bit more perspective about how lucky you are. There are times in a ball game where I'll just smile and laugh a little bit to myself and look around thinking, we get to play this game and have a lot of fun with it. Living with 5P, though, presents its own adversity. Wade has epilepsy as a result of his condition and suffers seizures. He has speech problems. But he's talking. He's walking, running actually, around the Monticello baseball field whenever he's there. Cheering on the St. Louis Cardinals, just like his dad, but unlike the Cubs fans, his mom and younger sister are. Wade is making the most out of a life Chris and Megan thought he might never have. The diagnosis doesn't define him, Chris said, before pausing 10 seconds to compose himself. I mean, I wouldn't change any of it. It sounds silly to say out loud, but I wouldn't. That's my son. That's who he is, and I love him because of that. Next story is Lincoln Laureate. He'd medal as one of her biggest supporters. Officer who helped Olympian Bonnie Blair get started plans to attend. Story by Luke Taylor, out of Champaign. Before she was an accomplished Olympic speed skater, Bonnie Blair was a hometown athlete supported by the Champaign Police Department. On Saturday, she'll be honored as a Lincoln Laureate by the Lincoln Academy of Illinois, and the last living police officer who helped raise funds to start her career plans to be in attendance at Krannert Art Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. To this day, I think we're probably still the only police organization in America that sponsored an Olympian like that, said Danny Strand, a former Champaign Police Detective Sergeant. He's pretty sure they're the only department to have been featured in Sports Illustrated, too. Blair connected with Detective Jerry Schweigart in 1982, short thousands of dollars she needed to further her speed skating career. As the Champaign Policemen's Benevolent Association was in the business of supporting local kids' sports teams, they started fundraising to make it happen. That help lasted 17 years before she retired, Strand said. She retired from skating the day I retired from the police department. Looking back, Strand had no idea Blair would become not only a local legend, but the first American to win 5 gold medals at the Olympic Winter Games. She didn't place at her very first games in 1984 in Sarajevo, Yugoslavia, but she did do better than any other American, and the story of a young woman supported by a police organization started to catch on. And then the phone calls started coming, Strand said. They kept coming. As head of the investigations department, Strand had a desk job. His second job was fielding calls from the likes of the LA Times, the New York Times, ABC, and even the White House, all wanting to talk to Blair or some of the police officers. Even so, Strand says the highest pressure call he ever received was one from Eleanor Blair. She called me one day at work and said, "Danny, I'm very upset. They just put some boxer on the front cover of Sports Illustrated, and not my girl, who just won 2 medals for America," Strand said. Fortunately, the folks at the magazine informed Strand they were already laying out next week's cover, with Blair front and center, and they'd even send him some oversized copies. Strand and Schweigart got a lot of attention for supporting Blair, but the whole department were huge fans. During one of her races, Strand remembers filling up Doyle's bar in the Ramada Inn, which was a huge sponsor for the fundraising efforts. If the fire marshal walked in, he would have had a tizzy fit because it was wall to wall, Strand said. Meanwhile, half of the department was busy investigating a triple homicide. There may have been some disconnect between their work and their celebrations for Blair, but Strand said that was part of the goal of their sponsorship. The department wanted young people to think of the police as people who they could turn to for help, even in non-emergency situations. You couldn't be happier as a policeman to sponsor somebody. You just can't name a better role model than Bonnie Blair for children, Strand said. It was perfect for us. Since retiring from speed skating, Blair has worked with the Alzheimer's Association, the American Brain Tumor Association, and the Leukemia Association to raise funds, and is the director of community engagement for developing athletes for speed skating high performance. Strand said he was there for Blair's last race and later went to her wedding, but he hasn't seen her since. He thinks it'll be fantastic to see her again at the Lincoln Laureate ceremony, even if he did have to make a phone call to learn what to wear to a black tie event. Alongside Blair, 2025's Lincoln Laureates include Sandra Cisneros, a poet, author, and essayist whose works focused on the lives of the working class have earned her numerous awards. Jean Gang, an internationally recognized architect and University of Illinois graduate known for designing the 101-story St. Regis, Chicago. Janice K. Jackson, EDD, the CEO of Hope Chicago and former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. Carol Marin, a journalist and Emmy Award-winning reporter known for her work on 60 Minutes and the Evening News with Dan Rather, who now co-directs the Center for Journalism Integrity and Excellence at DePaul University. Juliana L. Richardson, founder and president of The History Makers, the largest oral and video archive of profiles of 20th and 21st century African American leaders. Next story is State Farm Center Concert, Lone Star, We're Better Than Brothers. Drummer discusses group's origins, influences ahead of show Sunday. Story by Dave Hinton. Nashville. Keach Rainwater is a natural on a drum kit. Little could he have known as a 12-year-old in Plano, Texas, that when he rode his Huffy bike to find out who was playing live music in one of the neighborhood garages, it would lead to a lifetime of percussion. Along with some other players in the garage, there was a hippie guitar player. He looked like someone from the Doobie Brothers, Rainwater said. Everyone was taking turns on the drums, so I patiently waited my turn. I'd never played on a real kit. Just naturally, I knew how to do it. I got up there and started playing China Grove by the Doobie Brothers. The guitarist asked him how long he'd been playing. He told him he'd never played before. The guitarist was shocked. Rainwater, with Michael Britt, Dean Sams, original lead vocalist Richie McDonald, and bass guitarist John Rich, went on to found the country music band Texasee in 1992, which later turned into Lone Star. 33 years later, Lone Star and the 62-year-old Rainwater, who now lives in Nashville, are still at it and show no signs of slowing down. With Feudin' Hillbillies as special guests, Lone Star will perform in concert Sunday at State Farm Center, a place Rainwater said the group has never played. The performance is a concert with a cause, benefiting Dolly Parton's Imagination Library and United Way. Rainwater said he has a distant connection with this area. My drum teacher at North Texas State University in 1982 was Dave Miller from Champaign, Rainwater said. I was the 1 o'clock lab jazz band drummer. Miller taught me so much about discipline and good practice techniques, Rainwater said. I don't know if he's still playing. When Rainwater started in the business, he was influenced by several music genres, from rock to jazz to country. He was in a jazz band in Dallas and said he joined a country band because someone asked him to. Lone Star has charted more than 20 singles on the Hot Country Songs chart, 9 of which reached number 1. Rich left the band in 1998 and went on to join Big Kenny as one half of the duo Big and Rich. McDonald exited in 2007 to record as a solo artist and was replaced by former McAllister vocalist Cody Collins before returning in 2011. McDonald left a second time in 2021 to join The Frontmen and was replaced by former Sons of the Desert lead vocalist Drew Womack. Robbie Wilson is the group's bass player. The band recently released a 5-song EP covering legendary female artists. We have the idea to do these cover songs, Rainwater said. We each have a home studio. We thought it would keep the cost down to do it in those studios before deciding to get together in one place to make the recordings. The idea came to cover the female artists when Womack, who was waiting for someone to get his equipment plugged in, started singing Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time in his own style. Then everyone started joining in. Someone asked if the others had any other songs by female artists. The idea was, hey, that would be cool for each guy on stage to kick in with their favorite female song from the 70s up to now. You pick it and we'll record it, Rainwater said. Rainwater's first choice was Linda Ronstadt's It's So Easy, but they couldn't make it sound like Lone Star, so they went with Fleetwood Mac's You Make Lovin' Fun and meshed it with Take It Easy, ending with that song's minor note. Having been together for more than 3 decades, Lone Star's secret, according to Rainwater, is having similar goals in mind. Nobody wants to break off and be a solo act, he said. We all want to be in a great band. We just focus on getting along and respecting each other. Mutual respect for all musicians. We're better than brothers. were all professionals of being in a band. Lone Star tours much of the year until Christmas before taking off most of January and February, and then slowly ramping up in the spring. Rainwater doesn't tire of touring, and he said the reason is not to get bored. The band members have other interests. Rainwater and Womack each have a one-wheeler, an electric surfboard, on which they like to tour the city where they're playing. They like to visit thrift stores and see what bargains they can find. For Rainwater, he's always looking for vintage typewriters, which he collects, and for Womack, it's clothes. Next story is Illinois State Police. Toxicology clean for driver in fatal Chatham crash. Authorities investigating the possibility she had a sudden medical emergency. Out of Springfield, the AP. The driver of a car that barreled through a building used for popular after-school camp in central Illinois, killing three children and a teenager, was not under the influence of drugs or alcohol and may have had a medical emergency, police said Thursday. No decisions have been made on whether to file charges against the 44-year-old driver. Illinois State Police Director Brendan F. Kelly said at a news conference. The driver is not in custody, Kelly said. Evidence that she may have had a medical emergency was not conclusive, and the investigation is ongoing, Kelly said. The car went off the road Monday, crossing a field and smashing into the side of the building in Chatham used by Youth Needing Other Things Outdoors, also known as Why Not. It traveled through the building, striking people before exiting the other side. Six other children were hospitalized. Four of them remained hospitalized, including one in critical condition, a state police spokesperson said after Thursday's news conference. Those killed were Riley Britton, 18, of Springfield, Ainsley Johnson, 8, Catherine Corley, 7, and Alma Boonkrempe, 7. All of the children were of Chatham, a community of about 15,000 outside the Illinois capital of Springfield. The driver was not injured, but she was taken to a hospital for evaluation after the crash, Kelly said. She voluntarily submitted blood and urine samples that tested negative for drugs and alcohol, he said. Some evidence has been developed indicating the possibility of a medical emergency leading up to the crash, Kelly said. However, the investigation of this information and other evidence has not yet concluded and will continue until all leads and research have been exhausted. He said he could not provide a timeline for completing the investigation and said charges, if appropriate, would be up to the Sangamon County State's Attorney. The next story is Trump administration. Waltz ousted as advisor, tapped for ambassador. Story by John T. Bennett. Out of Washington. President Donald Trump has decided to remove Mike Walls from his post as National Security Advisor and will instead nominate him to be U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. From his time in uniform on the battlefield, in Congress, and as my National Security Advisor, Mike Walls has worked hard to put our nation's interests first. I know he will do the same in his new role, Trump wrote in a Thursday afternoon social media post. Trump also announced that Secretary of State Marco Rubio would serve as National Security Advisor in the interim. Walls is Trump's second pick for the UN ambassador position after New York Republican Representative Elise Stefanik, whose nomination for the post was scuttled in March amid concerns over Republicans' narrow majority in the House. Earlier in the day, a source with knowledge of the situation said the president had decided to oust Walls, a former Republican congressman from Florida, and his top deputy, Alex Wong, from their national security perches. The West Wing shakeup is the first of the second Trump administration and evoked a feeling of the chaos that at times dominated the president's first term. Walls came under fire in March following revelations that a journalist from The Atlantic was inadvertently added to a Signal chat about administration plans to strike Houthi targets in Yemen. Several Democratic lawmakers had called for Walz to step aside, and even some Republican members on national security committees had raised concerns about Walz's and other administration national security officials' use of the commercial messaging app to discuss sensitive details of coming U.S. military operations. Next story is the Justice Department. Four states faces lawsuits over climate actions. In Detroit, the AP. The U.S. Justice Department filed lawsuits against four states this week claiming their climate actions conflict with federal authority and President Donald Trump's energy dominance agenda. The DOJ on Wednesday filed lawsuits against Hawaii and Michigan over planned legal action against fossil fuel companies for harms caused by climate change. On Thursday, it sued New York and Vermont, challenging their climate superfund laws that would force fossil fuel companies to pay into state-based funds based on previous emissions. Next story is May Day, aka International Workers' Day, targeting Trumpization. Demonstrations in U.S. and around the world protest far-right agendas. Out of Chicago and the AP. Hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. and around the world rallied Thursday in May Day protests that united many in anger over President Donald Trump's agenda, from aggressive tariffs that are stoking fears of global economic turmoil to his administration's immigration crackdowns. In the United States, organizers framed this year's International Workers' Day protests as a pushback against what they see as the administration's sweeping assault on labor protections, diversity initiatives, and federal employees. Protesters lined streets in many cities from New York to Philadelphia to Los Angeles and held a boisterous rally outside the White House in Washington. In Chicago, thousands of people rallied in a West Side park before marching through downtown to the lakefront. Some played drums and danced while others chanted, "No justice, no peace." The crowd included union workers, immigrant rights advocates, pro-Palestinian activists, and students calling for better-funded public schools. "We need to stand up and fight back," said Latrina Barnes, a 48-year-old certified nurse's assistant, adding that worries Medicaid and Medicare might be affected under the Trump administration inspired her to protest in a May Day rally for the first time. Some rallygoers used humor to protest, displaying a Trump puppet, an inflatable Trump baby chicken, and a Trump pinata shaped like a bull. In downtown Los Angeles, thousands of demonstrators marched peacefully, hoisting signs saying, "Immigrants make America great," "Migration is beautiful," and "It's not the time to be silent." With bands playing and flags waving, the gathering had the feel of a celebration. "We're bringing the fight to the billionaires and politicians who are trying to divide us with fear and lies," said April Verrett, president of the Service Employees International Union, which represents 2 million workers. A number of speakers demanded elected officials protect workers' and immigrants' rights with the slogan, "One struggle, one fight, workers unite." The event was organized by the Los Angeles May Day Coalition, made up of labor unions and community-based groups. In Atlanta, hundreds gathered at a downtown park across from the state capitol. The crowd included some retired U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention workers. The CDC is headquartered in Atlanta and is expected to lose around 2,400 employees due to cuts by the Trump administration. "We really want to stand up for all of our fellow laborers who are laid off or just fired with no real reason," said Deblina Dada, who worked in global immunization efforts before retiring in 2023. "We really want to make a cry that without the CDC, bad things will happen." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of our News Gazette, Friday, May 2nd, 2023. 2025. Please stay tuned.